I'm Michael Gloster, and this is Fashion Cast. We're talking to fashion leaders and disruptors as we seek inspirational stories and expert insight into the world's most dynamic industry. Heard in over 70 countries, we're building an international fashion community based on fashion topics that matter. Please visit our website, fashioncast.co, to join our email list and learn more. Now, enjoy the show.
On this episode, you will meet Isabel De Sosa, founder of Acalia, a women's premium fashion company. Launched in 2021, the brand was scaled with amazing speed and is now found in major retailers, including Nordstrom, Lord & Taylor, Macy's, Hudson Bay, and countless boutiques around the globe. De Sosa, who completed her undergraduate business degree and MBA at the University of Miami, is also a business brand consultant and spent several years as a wealth management specialist before launching Acalia. Isabel De Sosa is joining FashionCast from Miami, Florida. Welcome to FashionCast, Isabel. We're so excited to have you on our show.
Thank you so much.
So your formal education is in economics and marketing. Why did you make the decision to concentrate on the fashion industry?
I didn't take any kind of decision. This was very natural. I started selling swimwear when I was in college. I was always that kid. I was always that kid trying to make money on the side. I was always like selling something. When I was like 7 years old, I tried to do like a directory list of all my classmates and then photocopy at my dad's office and tried to sell it to people because, of course, there was no iPhones, there was nothing. Then when I was in college, I started selling bikinis to sororities and things like that. So the fashion part came like very natural. I've always been like very feminine in that sense. So for me, it was like no brainer, to be honest with you. I didn't do any kind of like fancy marketing research to see if there was like a gap in the market or if like my brand was going to be successful or anything like that. Because I started like as a side hobby, a side hustle and bootstrapping essentially.
So, but long before you entered fashion, I mean, you actually had a career going in wealth management specialist. How did you transition from that into fashion and how has that industry helped you in the fashion industry? If it has, I don't know. Maybe it hasn't.
Oh, it did. It did. It helped me understanding how money works. It helped me understand how cash flow works, how important profit is, how to basically manage your assets, tax, for sure. That was a huge thing. How to save money that, you know, the smartest way possible. So I think that definitely like lead me to that. After wealth management, I work in the marketing industry within a retail company. They used to sell online and offline. And I ended up being the general manager for multiple stores that this company had at that time. So essentially that also gave me an idea of how fashion works. So I think the combination of the wealth management part and the being a manager for one of these companies, It was probably the best combination for me. It really, really helped me out a lot. I would say if you're starting a business, if you can have the experience of working for somebody else before, especially in some kind of industry that's going to help you out, understand how you're going to manage your finances, your income, and your profit, that's 10x better than actually just starting from scratch alone. I think there's no problem in working for anybody else. I think there are like plenty of jobs that are like as equal as fulfilling as having your own business. So I think, you know, it's really what works for you.
So Christine, this is kind of like the opposite that we always run into because we're always complaining about the fashion industry and how little they train in the world of business and how easy it is to fail. So for example, so many designers come out of designer school and then they have no clue in terms of how to run the business. But in your case, you know, you kind of came in the back door, you know, a lot of business, and then you were able to apply those resources to your brand.
The high-end women's fashion space is very competitive. Why did you choose to enter this area of retail?
Well, I think any kind of industry these days is competitive and very saturated. Even if you want to become an influencer tomorrow, the market is also saturated for that.
That's so true.
So I think it's kind of like choose your heart, you know, everything is hard, but like just choose yours. In my case, I noticed that it was easier in a way to sell to the high-end market or to sell like, to the high-end market instead of like selling to the masses. I mean, in my case, this is my personal opinion. I think it's easier because the more value you add within your product and your brand, the more of a premium price you can charge. And honestly speaking, I think that consumer is 10x easier to manage. They like a certain level. They like a certain lifestyle. And if you like match their needs, it's going to be completely perfect for you. Whereas if you go to the mass market, the margins are way lower and essentially you need a huge volume. And honestly, I think one of the hardest things when you have a fashion brand, especially with the first years, is achieving volume. So I think one of the easiest is just like aiming for the higher market because essentially less volume, but yes, you have higher margins. So as long as you're meeting their needs and like adding value to the market, you're good to go. And of course, having a great product, because in my personal experience, again, this is my personal experience. This is like nothing. I'm not trying to give financial advice or whatsoever. But in my personal experience, no matter how good your branding is, no matter how good your logo and your how beautiful your boxes are or who's wearing that, if the product is not good in the long run, you're not going to get anywhere.
Right. It's the Steve Jobs analogy. Product.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the mission of Kalia?
So we basically have a philanthropic approach within the brand. It's basically giving, we at this point, we help around 150 families in Venezuela. We started with Margarita Island, which is a small island in Venezuela where poverty is very high. But right now we're expanding to Caracas, which is basically the main capital. However, this year we're collaborating with some associations here in the U.S., which I'm very excited to say. I cannot disclose it right now because it's going to be in March, and you know right now it's February, and I'm not able to disclose it. But I'm very happy that we're finally able to be part of like charities and nonprofit organizations over here. And we're also, I mean, actually the one we're going to work with is for animals, this year. So, I'm very happy about that. So yeah, basically we're giving high quality. We're giving limited quantity editions, limited editions, for clothing, meaning that we don't mass produce. It's on the slow fashion side of the business. And, also we have a philanthropic mission.
That's really interesting. So are you saying that you're choosing different nonprofits each year, or are you kind of married to one or two for the long term?
No, at the beginning of my brand, I was kind of not married, but I had an agreement with an organization in Venezuela, which was what we know as in the U.S. similar to a Red Cross. But right now, I'm actually partnering with one here in the U.S. that, again, I'm not able to say the name yet, but I'm super happy about it. Because at the very end, you know, no matter how much you're making a year, no matter like how, I think as a person, you can give back to people with knowledge, and as a brand, you can give back with funds. So, and I think that's the mission of life. What else are we here for, right?
So have you determined what percentage of the profits are given back?
We're looking at, well, it really depends on what the agreement with the charities are. We're very flexible on that, of course, to a certain extent, because we also need to be profitable. We're a very new brand in the market. We have been around like for 6-7 years. So, of course, we cannot go overboard and say, oh, we're going to give like 50% of the profits to or anything like charity whatsoever. For example, with this charity in particular, we were going to work in the U.S., we are basically giving away products, and we're giving away gift cards, and we're giving away everything is for the charity.
Just the fact that you have this mission of the company on one path and then the other is philanthropic, it seems like you can't really start a business today without doing this and building a community. There's really some expectation that there's some kind of social cause going on. So that's very impressive. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Well, you need to be careful these days too, because a lot of companies, they, when it comes to organizations, especially environmental causes, it's a lot of greenwashing too. So, you know, I think as a from a consumer standpoint, just look for the certifications that people actually has, especially when it comes to greenwashing, because the possibilities that a fashion brand or any kind of brand is, for example, 100% sustainable is very low, very, very low.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we've run into this over and over again with the greenwashing.
Yeah.
So I take what you're saying at face value for sure.
So Akelia was launched in 2021. What were some of the most challenging obstacles the company had faced in the past several years?
I think it was cash flow, because I was doing a lot of consignment at the beginning. You know, I had my 9-to-5. I was bootstrapping. It was a lot. And I was doing a lot of consignment at that point. And when I started to do wholesale as well, you know, some people say they're going to pay net 30, but that net 30 never happens. So you're basically, even you send a product right before and you're waiting 30 days for it actually to pay you. And then it's like 60 days and then it's like 180 days. And you're still like trying to figure out where the check is, right? So I think cash flow definitely. And second one, I would say, is the correct allocation of resources. Why? Because when you get like the cash in, you really need to be like very intentional of where you're putting your money at, because it makes no sense. Well, at least for me, from my standpoint, it makes no sense to like put, I don't know, like 20% of your marketing, of your profit into a marketing budget when you know you actually need to invest in your product. So, you know, it's like being very intentional of like, okay, where is my money at and what is this going to make for me? What is the end goal? I was talking to this yesterday. It makes no sense for you to go to like a fair or anything like that if you know that the end goal is not selling and it's going to take out like 30% of your profit. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, you need to be like very intentional over your allocation of your resources. So yeah, those two.
And we will be back in one moment with Isabel De Sousa after this brief message from Ome Organics. That's O-M-E Organics.com.
Hi, I'm Christine. You may know me as co-host of Fashion Cast, but I'm also the founder and CEO of Ome Organics. I believe skincare should be simple. Our hyaluronic cream is all you need to nourish your skin morning and night. Sourced from the highest quality organic ingredients from around the world and manufactured in an FDA facility right here in the USA, this incredible cream works to firm, deeply moisturize, and smooth the appearance of your skin. Please visit omeorganics.com and use promo code FASHIONCAST to receive a 15% discount off your first purchase, and you will receive our monthly newsletter free. Now, back to the show.
And we're back with Isabel De Sousa from Akelia.
So tell me, Isabel, how were you able to scale your brand so quickly?
I think three key things. Late nights.
Okay.
Unfortunately, because I had my 9-to-5 at that point. Outsourcing. You need to outsource. Unfortunately, you cannot do everything yourself. So taking advantage of that. And third one, credit lines. I think that those are the three components. Look, one day a friend of mine asked me, Isabel, do you owe money? And I'm like, well, I'm a business owner. What do you think? Of course I owe money. Of course I have that. I think that's something entrepreneurs need to be comfortable with. If you're creating things, you're also investing. So you're also, of course, having credit lines or loans or, you know, whatever it is. If you're lucky, you have an angel investor or something similar. But in my case, I think those are the three things. Because unfortunately, to make money, you need to, you know, make money to work, right? And also outsourcing my first employees, I hired them, all of them outside of the US. And this is something that I think there's no shame about saying, because this is something Amazon does, this is something a bunch of like companies do. And, you know, I think it's the smartest way, because it's impossible to basically be profitable if you're like fixed costs with like employees are it's super high, especially if you're like bootstrapping, right? So I think, yeah, outsourcing, cash flow, I mean, available cash. And unfortunately, guys, late nights. For me, it was that. I'm going to be honest here. There's no shortcuts. I mean, look, I think somebody starts anywhere. And I have no shame saying that I was like crying in the living room at 3 a.m. one day. Because, you know, I was like, oh my God, how do I do this? You know? And I think it's completely okay. You start somewhere. But I'm fine with that.
Yeah. I think there's been millions and millions of entrepreneurs who have wept in their living rooms or garages over the years.
Oh, yeah.
And what's amazing is that it seems like you were able to overcome that and make it to where you're at now, which is, it seems very stable, where, you know, how many businesses a day are going out of business? So, I mean, there's a lot to be said.
Yeah, no, I think what happens is that there's like this idea going on that you can have like the perfect life balance. And that's completely a lie. Well, in my case, it's a lie. You can have it all, yes, but not at the same time. It's just proportions. Like, for example, when I started my business, I knew my business had like most like weight on my life, right? It was the thing that was taking the most of my time. So, and I was comfortable with that. I think there's such a beauty in being comfortable, being uncomfortable, right? So I think that's kind of my biggest advice, because if you're still seeing like people's life and you think that everybody has like figured it out and she's starting a business or he's starting a business and everything is going out well, it's not the case. And that's okay.
No, that's the perfect answer. And that's really the in the weeds entrepreneurial answer that you just never hear when you're going through social media and there's always some entrepreneur trying to sell something about how they did it and they're trying to sell you the latest book. But what you have here is really profound in terms of, you know, this is how I did it. It was very difficult. It's not easy. You can do it. And you did have the credit line. So the credit lines were what, through just small banks? Were these through larger banks? Are these just credit cards?
I went to a larger bank, and I was so, I don't even understand. I was, you know, the adrenaline of starting something. To be honest with you, I think I didn't even like look much at like the interest. I was like, I'm just going to do this and pay it like as soon as possible and go with it. So I think like kind of the adrenaline that drove me out.
Yeah, that's amazing too. So in terms of the distribution, Acalia's distribution channels, you know, I'm interested because if people look up Acalia, it's just not like only in Nordstrom's and Lord & Taylor and Macy's and whatever. It's really in, you know, other retailers and boutiques, you know, kind of scattered throughout the world, which is very interesting. And you mentioned earlier consignment. Is that one of the ways you're getting into some of these boutiques? And what kind of, these are higher end fashion boutiques?
No. So consignment was the way I got into smaller boutiques when I was starting off. So I was cold calling boutiques all the time. So I had like this huge list of boutiques like in the US. And in the US, why? Because of course it's like easier to manage that when you're doing consignment. And I was offering to do consignment to the ones that were like, that had like more foot traffic. And I was like, you know, asking just for sales reports every month. After they see that the product has rotation and is actually profitable, I used to have like a very, very small wholesale minimum quantity, which was, I still remember, $500. So that was like MOQ kind of thing. And then after that, that's how I scale like the small boutiques, right? You know, DMing, cold calling, all of that small minimum quantity. And at the beginning was consignment to the ones that have like very good foot traffic. And then the second part of the business, when you start talking to these big retailers, of course, you need to have a little bit of presence, you need to have press, and you need to, of course, all of these retailers, they want like to see margins and good products, right? But the way I found these retailers was through trade shows. Within fashion, there's like plenty of trade shows. I recommend Coverty and I recommend Magic trade show. But Coterie is more like if you have like a brand on the higher end, and magic trade show is a little bit more for the masses. What I recommend, which I actually did too, is that since this to exhibit at any of these trade shows is it's kind of like costly. So try to like split the profit, split the cost of it with either another brand or talk to a showroom to see if they can represent you. But I will always recommend you to be present as a founder, always, because it's different, you know?
Yeah, those are good recommendations too in terms of, you know, sharing cost and what have you. Those are really good ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is Acalia a sustainable fashion brand?
No. Sustainable, I mean, we are slow fashion. We're not fast fashion like a Fashion Nova or like a Forever 21 or anything similar, especially because we work on limited edition collections. But we're definitely not 100% sustainable. That will be greenwashing. And it's impossible. There's always waste within the fashion industry. We did, at the beginning of the brand, I did try to do upcycled products, meaning that it was done with dead stock fabrics. You know, we tried to do accessories with that, but honestly, the rotation was not that high. And all of the process about creating them was a huge headache. So I didn't see any kind of like profit from doing that. And at the end, even if you do upcycle products from your production lines, you still you're not 100% sustainable.
So are you designing the pieces in the collection or are you part of the design?
I'm part of the design team in the sense that I know what is going to sell, because I know my consumer and I know how the market works and I know what works for the brand itself. But I'm not a fashion designer. So I don't know about like patterns. I don't know about like technical packs or things like that. So yeah, I do have a team for that.
Yeah. And we've interviewed companies that, in fact, there's a really famous one in New York, Fabric to Fashion. So I don't know if you know them or not, but
yeah.
And there's a number of these companies that are out there. So if you just have this apparel idea, you know, and then you can approach them and then they can obviously hold your hand with regard to that part of the business. But of course they don't know half of what you know in terms of marketing, branding and distribution and what have you. So good.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's positive too. You know, because a lot of people say, yeah, I wish I would have done this or I have this in my mind about that. They have no clue about how to go about this.
To be completely honest with you, I don't think I learned as much as I in school or in college, as much as I did working. So I'm not quite sure. I mean, there's two different sides of the business. Some people want to be a fashion designer and go to, Paris Fashion Week and New York Fashion Week and aim towards a very high-end market. And some people want to build a business about fashion because they're good with numbers. I do think that you need the two components within the business. It can be a partner. It can be somebody you hire. You can be the creative mind and hire some numbers person. But I don't think a fashion business can run without the two components, the creative and the numbers side of it.
Yeah, it's obvious you have the creative stylistic side of it too, you know,
yeah.
And obviously you have the business side. So it's a match made in heaven, Isabel. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Let's just talk a little bit about, because you have this other kind of, like you would say, maybe this moonlighting going on. You also consult business owners from all levels of business. You know, what kind of business expertise are you providing those either individuals or companies?
So this started very organically. I didn't plan it or anything. It's just, I had like a couple of friends always asking me questions about, oh, how do I do this? How do I do that? What do you think about this? I want to start like this business, normal coffee conversations. And then one day I got introduced to this other entrepreneur that he was helping out others within the industry. And he was like, hey, Isabel, you know what? You should like come and be a speaker at this event in Canada. And I was like, oh, maybe. And then, so I went to this event in Canada and I was a speaker. And after that, some couple of girls from the event were like, hey, do you do like consultations or anything similar? I was like, no, but I can help you out. What do we need? I started helping out friends, and then eventually some other people like came to me, and I was like, why not? If I can help somebody, you know, just don't go through everything I went through. That's completely okay. And again, I think that's what life is about, right? Just giving back whatever your knowledge is. Even it doesn't need to be like business wise, even if you're a mom, you're also like giving back whatever your knowledge is to your kids, right? So I think that's like what life is about.
Yes, very noble. Very nice. So you were in Canada, huh? Well, it's very cold mm-hmm. there too, Isabel. You know, very cold in Canada. I don't know if it was cold when you, what part of Canada did they?
It was very cold.
Did you have to go to Quebec or some godforsaken place?
I was in Toronto. Oh. It was not that bad. It was last year, but yeah, it was very cold.
Yeah. Yeah. We just had a lady from Toronto, one of the Toronto University, talking about a specific subject.
Why do you believe it's important to share your business experience with other entrepreneurs?
I think the question is why not? I'm not here to portray like a perfect image that everything went perfect from since day one. I'm just here to be like very transparent about it and say it is still hard for me. But I think we're all work in progress. So again, I think that's what life is about. It's just like giving back whatever you know and your knowledge, your expertise. If you can help somebody out and actually like even like, you know, make something about it, why not? And I think the market is big enough. The market is big enough. You don't need to compete with other people in your industry. I think we can all collaborate. So it makes really no sense. Why not?
Yeah, that's really important message. And I think what you touched on about how big the market is.
It is. It is so big. And everybody is different. Everybody like runs around their business in a different way. What works for you might not work for others, but like what I'm saying is that, you know, there's so much room and opportunity when you start collaborating with other businesses instead of just essentially like go against them. So, you know, it's funny. I was consulting a girl like the other day and she actually has like some services within the manufacturing company that she uses that I need. So, you know, why not?
You could help each other out. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Isabel, where can FashionCast listeners find you?
Well, for consulting, you can find me at Scale Your Product. It's on Instagram. You can find me by Isabel De Sousa. And the brand, you can find it by Akelia Official on Instagram and akeliaofficial.com.
Isabel, do you want to mention that you're on Intro or no?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually highly recommend that for any kind of entrepreneur. You can also book me by the hour if you have like any kind of questions. You can send me your questions and pain points before. I usually say that it's more or less like 1 hour, but I usually go a little bit more than that. I just want to answer your questions. So you send it like around 4 or 5 days, sometimes a week, depending on how long your questions are. And I'll just go ahead and answer all of those within the call.
Wow, that's exciting. I mean, you can get real hands-on consulting. It sounds like it's very reasonable in terms of cost.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're actually been in the driver's seat here. So I think that's one of the gems of this particular podcast is that you are accessible to, you know, startups all over. So that's great. I would say reach out to Isabel, please. Isabel De Sousa, it has been an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much for appearing on FashionCast.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for listening to FashionCast. To hear more shows and join our email list, please visit our website, fashioncast.co. You can also join us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Until next time, I'm Michael Gloucester for FashionCast, the voice of fashion.